Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hey, everybody. We're back. This is Teresa in America.
Hi, guys. What's up, everybody?
In the Open. Today's topic is depression a choice? Which really covers all mental illnesses. Like, are mental illnesses a choice? When you hear that question, like, what's your immediate, what do you want to do? I feel like I have big feelings even at the question. So I'm wrestling with just like what it's stirring in me.
Yeah. Like, my gut reaction is to be like, no, man, insert profanity. It's not a choice.
Yeah, exactly. I feel rage. Besides that, there's a question about this that like just gets to so many things that happens for people with mental illnesses.
It's like the questioning of the validity that you would even think that this is a choice. It's like anything that you think is different than like what is considered norm is like a choice. And it's like, who would in their right mind be like, oh, I'm just going to choose a much more difficult life just because I can. I don't understand how people could think that.
Yeah. We also spend so much time justifying our illness in our own minds and with our families and our friends. It's such a wrestle that when someone comes along and you get that question, it's like being gaslit. Again, you know, you're just like, well, I already question my reality and all these things. So you already feel guilty and ask that question yourself. Like, maybe I'm just making it all up.
When you first start dealing with any type of mental illness, you ask yourself that question. Like, is it just me?
Yeah. Did I do something?
Yeah. Am I making a choice to do? Am I hearing things? Am I feeling this? And if somebody responds to you with that question, you know, or that idea like, oh, but you could just feel better.
Or you're being lazy. That's the one that's hard for me. It's horrible because in its experience, you feel like you are lazy, but your brain is literally trying to kill you. So it's hard not to be like, well, I am just lazy. And if I was stronger and I could pull myself up by my bootstraps like other people, then one day I'll make it. But when I hear this question, It probably brings up a lot of feelings because it's tied to what becomes a traumatic experience for people who experience chronic diseases, including depression. Like, we spend that time wrestling with that. So when somebody brings it up, it's like, oh, you know, like I'm transported back to this time where I thought maybe it is all my fault and that I somehow chose this. But the answer is no, depression is not a choice. It would be lovely if it could be a choice, a light switch that I could go over to just be like, oh, choose to be a better person today and you're going to be awesome, if only.
I think the hard part, though, and this is me playing devil's advocate, is like, where does that question come from for somebody who hasn't ever experienced mental illness?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to explore that because does it come from ignorance? I think in some way it does. But does it also come from a place of fear? Because if you can't explain it, then you may not necessarily be able to fix it.
Yep. That's interesting. Because there is no fix, right? We don't have cures for mental illnesses. I think a big part of our discussion is about why isn't depression a choice? And then what components or how does choice enter into a recovery process? Because it's not as easy as just, well, it's not a choice. It doesn't mean that choices aren't involved in a recovery process.
Oh, right.
So why isn't depression a choice?
Because it's chemical, biochemical.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's biochemical. I say in my mind, like, I come from a family that struggles with depression. And I've seen this in other friends and families or people who have mental illnesses as genetic predisposition. So if you only think of depression as a choice, you don't understand the biological aspects of mental illness. You don't think about the way that the genes that I inherited make me especially at risk for something, right? Yeah. I think historically, this the most challenging part was for people to accept that addictions, for example, were not choices. For a long time in human history, we were like, well, an addiction is a personal failing and a choice. Like you choose to be an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot of research and time for people to understand, and I still don't think that they do, just like with depression and other mental illnesses, like understand the way that biology itself sets you up at a different level than someone else.
Yes, I totally believe in the notion that lack of information around biology does make you think, could lead you down this path of thinking that depression is a choice. In the same way that in what you're referencing around substance use, right, that it becomes a character flaw, so that you really do believe, and there has been this belief that if you were stronger, if you're more capable of just handling your emotions better, of being able to just let things, you know, slide off your back and not worry about things, then you're making a choice towards having depression. And that is not at all how it is. So there is that aspect to it, that sociological kind of aspect, that it's not just, you know, the person. You suck as a person, so this is why you have depression.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting that you brought up the other side, though. So why do our family and our friends or loved ones say things like that to us? And that's where it hurts the most, because if I see it on, like, Reddit or Facebook or whatever, I've had enough practice to just create some distance there. But if somebody close mm-hmm. to me comes at me like that, it's harder, right? Because you care about those relationships. So I love that you brought up, like, what happens for someone with why they say that? You said people do that because the alternative is the reality that there is no fix. I think there's a lot of insecurity. I mean, people want problems fixed. They don't like seeing people suffer.
Of course, you need to have a solution. So seeing somebody in distress is very jarring, especially if it's someone that you care about, right? So then you're automatically going to jump to that idea, like, what can I do to help you? What can I do to make you feel better? And mm-hmm. there's nothing you can do. If I'm dealing with diabetes and my family's like, you shouldn't have that piece of cake. Okay, does that mean you're going to take out any piece of cake that's ever in my existence? You know, like, that's not logical either. So in many ways, you're trying to be the problem solver instead of just being a listener, which is very hard to do.
So hard for people.
That's the hardest.
Yeah. Yes. When you're in that moment, I think for a lot of the older generation too, they would say things like, I got worse judgment statements from people who lived at a different time and had different expectations about what mental illness was supposed to be. So for them, it was like, well, I didn't struggle with depression and we have the same brain and you need to just get up and go to school, or like, why do you care so much, or something like that. And it wasn't until like years later that I would come back to that conversation and be like, dude, you didn't get better. You shoved it so deep and then you covered it up and you somehow thought that that was you being better. That wasn't better. You know what I mean? But I just carry the guilt of what they were saying.
Yes. I believe what you're saying, because I'm thinking back to maybe some reactions that I've had from folks. And I've heard, especially when I work out in the community, right? When you are speaking to older people, especially when my work with like the Latino community, right? Like, they're just like, well, I'm fine. Look at me. I've been able to just continue to work and stuff like that. And they tie your ability to continue to do something as doing better. And it's a breakdown in understanding how your ability to function and continue to function does not mean that you are well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just means that you've been able to encapsulate whatever feelings you have around that particular issue, put it away, leave it in a box. And the only times in my experience that it comes out is when you are drunk as a bat, right? You're like chilling, like all out. And that's when your emotions come out. You know, you're having some distress. Maybe somebody's passed away and you have an ability to openly emote, right? And then you're like, Hello, what happened here? It's like you could have been telling me about how you feel, but it's only in those experiences where emotions are allowed that then they are able to actually show them
and have,
and
like
that's the disconnect.
Hardcore meltdowns. We would have like these major meltdowns during family holidays, or people hid it. Like I know tons of family who just, because we didn't talk about it and the shame associated with it, because, you know, blah blah blah, chose to be depressed or whatever, that for a long time in our family just people were alone. Like, what a disservice. I'm really glad that I'm at least away from that space. Obviously, it still brings up feelings, but I don't feel nearly as much of that shame or fear that I brought a lot of this on to myself.
When you speak about these issues, one of the things that kind of pops up for me is there is a difference when people are functioning and you have like that distressing moment. But what has happened in my experience is that the more people realize that I work in this space, two things happen. One, they may be less inclined to share around me because they're like, oh my God, she's going to psychoanalyze us and like do that mental health thing she does. Or be like, hey, America, you know, such and such, such and such, you know, don't tell nobody, but they need help. But still shying away from actually being like, hey, man, I'm struggling.
I think that's why normalizing these experiences are so critical to tackling this question.
Yeah.
Is like, this question of is depression a choice, is mental illness a choice, is addiction a choice, comes from the lack of awareness for most of society about what the reality of living with a mental illness is like. And I don't expect people to have full awareness or empathy. I think that's very hard. Just like I don't know what it's like to live with Crohn's, or I don't know what it's like to live with arthritis, right? Like I could never fully be there. But I do ask people in my space, being in relationship with me, is accepting that this part of reality is true. And having that lens as part of your framework for being in relationship with me and in the struggle. When something comes up, there's no shame involved with saying, hey, are you entering a depressed episode? I can only have that conversation with my husband because we've gotten through any reactive defensiveness. Because if I felt like he was judging me for my depression, then he said that, I would automatically react with like, are you trying to tell me that it's my fault? You know what I mean? And I'm really grateful that we're beyond that. And he can just be like, I think something's wrong. And there is just like unconditional positive regard, at least on that factor, so that I could be like, oh, you're right. Yes, I'm back here in this space.
I think that's very powerful to have somebody in your corner that's able to not only recognize when that's happening, but also give you the space to be able to just kind of be in it, you know, and live that moment as you need to. But there is also this aspect of, for a lot of people, especially when they're beginning like their mental health journey, in trying to differentiate how to continue to keep yourself safe and be in a space of safety for your mental health, you know, protecting yourself while having these outside unsupportive kind of, you know, forces around you that are consistently kind of being like, yeah, you could be feeling better if you change your mindset. You need to calm down, you know, nothing's that serious. So in many ways, you kind of have to protect, you have to create a shell that protects you from all of these other aspects so that it doesn't continue to like poke holes in your own recovery journey. So that at the end of the day, you're like, despite all of that noise, I was still able to move through that period.
It is harder when you don't have support, or when somebody comes you and says depression is a choice, because basically in that moment, that person is kind of making their lack of empathy or understanding part of your problem. And if you don't have the barriers that you're saying to put up and block that and be like, you know, like, no, I won't even allow you. that kind of narrative basically becomes part of your internal narrative and will derail you.
Yes.
For a long period of time. So I think it's really important for people who are in recovery to hear that and say that in order to understand how this aspect itself is a barrier to your own ability to see the truth of your illness or what's happening for you and like make a decision on how you choose to recover.
Yeah.
Which is where then the next question that we ask is like, so where is choice involved in recovery?
Part of it, I would say the choice exists in, God, that's hard. I was going to say to just frankly ask yourself a difficult question if the people that you have around you are worthwhile. And I say that with the caveat that I know that in some cases, they just are going to be there. You know, if it's like your mom or your dad or whatever, and you're younger and you can't really like disengage.
Okay. I think I see where right. you're going.
But when you're getting older and you have an ability maybe to create your own space and there are people that just come into your life that are not supportive, that's where a choice exists to be like, you're not helping. Don't even come near this because you're not allowed. So that's a choice that I make all the time. You know, like, yeah. Do I even really want you in here? No. Step off.
Yes. A choice about who you expose yourself to, who mm-hmm. you are in relationship with, whether or not they are supportive, whether or not they choose to take a stance of support and learning.
Oh, yeah.
Or if they're going to continue to just drill down on this negative and unhelpful narrative.
Yeah.
I have definitely X'd people out, not sometimes permanently, but even just for a period of time. And I had to learn as a skill what it meant to say to people, like, what we are doing here is so unhealthy. I'm going to choose to stop talking to you until you can learn to be respectful of what is happening for me. And that was so freaking hard.
No, I've had those conversations. And it's not always received well. I would say in my experience, people are like, who the hell do you think you are to tell me if and when I can come in out of your life? And it's like, I'm sorry, you just gave me all the power there. It's my life, you know? Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to get to a place where you can create those boundaries. And in a past episode, we talked about like soft and hard boundaries, right? And I think one of the main issues is really understanding what you need to get to a place where you are well enough, not like recovered, you know, nothing like that. Yeah. Just well enough to be like, this isn't good for me.
The other backlash that I often see is like, I'm just trying to help you.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
You're going to
I'm just
X
doing
me?
This because I'm I just, care about you.
I'm just helping you.
Right.
And then it feels like more gaslit where you're like, am I wrong? Everything is telling you you're wrong. Like your brain is literally telling you you're wrong with mental illnesses. So it's so hard to identify truth and stick with truth. What is a judgment from others versus what is reality? And how do you make a decision to move forward based on your understanding of like truth versus judgment versus what is within the realm of my own control?
Yes.
I like the framework that where choice comes in is rooted in each of us personally making the decision about what is healthy or unhealthy for us in our recovery process.
Yeah.
So yes, part of where your choice lies exists, but I do need a caveat. This is a thing. When I'm in the middle of an episode, it's like your brain is the computer. We keep saying that. Your brain is a computer. And if its CPU is overloaded in this one space, it doesn't have freaking energy to focus on anything else. That is not a moment where I'm able to make choices. And then over time, I've had to learn like your brain is going to offer you windows where you have mm-hmm. enough energy to say, here is a moment where you need to make a better choice. Or here is a moment where you're gonna be able to go, oh my gosh, okay, call in all of the artillery and just
the reinforcements.
Do all the things you need to do to make things better right now, because you're not in that space where it took you 6 months to figure out how to make things better. Let's try and get that down to 2 months.
It sounds from what you're saying that another part of the choice that exists is in how you react to the situation that you're experiencing.
If my brain allows it, that's the twofold. It's like, yes, I have a choice. Yes, I have a choice, but does my brain have the capacity to literally absorb what is being said to me in a way that is forward moving? Because when your brain is overloaded in that space, sometimes no matter what, whatever is being entered into it is literally not computing. And people get that because I'll say, like, everybody has these moments. We talked about this where you're so stressed that you're paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of a really hardcore episode, that's what that feels like, but it extends across weeks and not hours.
So is there a choice in, I don't even know if people still do this, control, alt, delete, the system is shutting down, you know, and you're making an active decision to be like, this is the only place, and in this kind of way, I'm going to be able to function. Or
I think that's why sleep is a really weird experience, because in a mental health brain, I think that sleep is a symptom of depression. It's been called a symptom of depression, but for sometimes, I don't know if this everybody relates to this, but at least for me, when I'm in the middle of an episode, all I can think about is sleep, and it's not just a symptom. Like, depression caused me to sleep. Sometimes I'm like, am I sleeping? Because this is what my brain needs to give itself the space to get better. It's just, It doesn't operate on a timeline that's good or appropriate for our society that wants us to be hyper productive all the time.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so like, is sleep a symptom or like a reaction to depression to cope? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder about this all the time.
I think about even like the most tiniest of choices, which may seem humongous to others or even like super tiny to people. You know, like, I am going to take a shower. And the thought processes that have to occur when you are struggling with a depressive episode, anxiety episode, whatever, to be present enough in that moment. But this also takes, I'm going to say, it takes time and practice to get to this place to be like, what is it that I need right now? You know, because I go through that, and I know you go through that, where we're asking ourselves, like, dude, have you had water? Have you eaten? And to a place where you're then able to kind of connect the dots to be like, oh, I'm feeling like this because of this stuff I didn't do. Mm-hmm. And to the outside world who thinks that we are making a choice about this, it's like, no, I didn't forget to eat because I just forgot to eat. It's like my brain isn't even registering because I'm so focused on other things.
Yeah.
So that's why I think choices can be perceived as minuscule. And that's where judgment exists, because you said that earlier, where people come and place, they utilize judgment as a scapegoat to basically say that their response to your living with depression is a choice, because they're like, oh, but X person was able to do whatever they could do. And the only thing that comes to my mind is like that thing where they're like, well, if your friends are going to do it, are you going to do it too?
Yeah. It's like,
I thought you told me never to follow people. I'm doing things on my own.
Yeah. And what happens when someone says that on the receiving end is that you get so defensive yourself that the first thing you, when you're early in your recovery journey, you get defensive and reactive to that question. So you shut down, you take on that blame, you question your own reality, you question if it's your fault, and that adds to the problem. We talked about that, right? But what you learn to do over time when people ask that question is to not take it personally. You know, you're going to have feelings, they're going to come up, but you have practiced like, I am not picking up this extra problem right now in my life. It is, I've already dealt with this. I've been there before. And what you say to that person is spoken in like a less reactive truth where you're just like, hey, I know you think that you're trying to help, but that framework is really not helpful at all.
Yeah.
It's actually very hurtful. And it comes from a space where you don't understand what depression is as an illness, as a biological condition. And that hurts my feelings. And I think if we communicated that, that's what I call like the practiced response. I worked on this crap in the shower. Yeah. On repeat, right? Like, this sounds like what I wish I said instead of saying, get the F away from my face or I'm going to cut you.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's where my reaction would automatically go. Be like, the hell?
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, yeah. Even like, still, like, you. So like what I feel like I've practiced over time is like, I have those thoughts, but I just keep them on lockdown. And then I have to like take a breath and be like, this is super hard to say, but I'm going to try my best to say what it is. Also, you know what? You're right. In my next recovery processes, when I struggle, I know enough to be like, okay, I got to go on protective mode. So these are the things I'm going to do. And if that means like withdrawing from people, like that's another like symptom of mental illness where people are like, oh, you're isolating, withdrawing, but you're like, I am, but also it's a protective factor because I don't want to feel the shame of people being like, oh, where have you been? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to be like, dude, all I literally want to do is sleep. But it's also because I don't want to deal with the thing of what people are going to throw at you. And that takes energy. And it's just like, my brain's trying to kill me right now. So you're getting next.
You know what this kind of reminds me of, this conversation is the conversation that exists like around racism and prejudice and microaggressions where a lot of times you are gaslit, right? And you're like, did I misinterpret that? Wait, what? Why am I thinking that? And then it's up to you to help educate the other people around whatever was said was wrong. And this is very similar in that case, right? Where you have to educate people. But it's not your job to educate people.
Yeah.
It really isn't. If you want to take that time and that emotional labor to do that work, to be like, okay, I'm going to spend 30 minutes of my time trying to help you understand why what you said was hurtful, demeaning, enter whatever verb here, right? But there is also a choice that you can make in saying, no, you want to learn more about this? You know what? Go check out the internet. Go look at some things that are online about these experiences, because if you really care about me, I would hope that you do that.
Yeah.
And you put the onus on the individual, because it really isn't your responsibility unless you want to take it on. And even when you take it on, you can still say, I've had enough. Thank you. Go find an encyclopedia.
Learning how to deal with haters gonna hate, that is in fact a recovery skill. You know, it goes to show how much these little nuances play into the way that we recover from any illness.
I would say this final thing about depression being a choice. If you're posed with that question, or if that comes into your life in some way, you have a responsibility to yourself. That's it. Nobody else. About what you can do for your health, for your wellness. So it's not a choice. You didn't one day choose to be this way. It just is. Yeah. And you just got to navigate it.
I love that. You have a choice to choose you. And in choosing you, you're reflecting back non-truths to say no. And then bring the control back to what you can have control over. And only you know how much you're pushing yourself in the direction you want to be and whether or not you aren't and how you want to move. And that decision is only yours to make. Don't let anybody else take that crap from you. I love it. Keep on fighting in the open.
Talk to you next week.